It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. While the restoration of citizenship and voting was mostly automatic in the past, currently, under a policy Governor Branstad signed in 2011, ex-felons need to jump through several hoops and file requests in order to restore their voting rights. A bill in the Iowa Senate aims to make the process simpler by requiring that citizenship rights, including voting rights and holding public office, be granted to former offenders upon discharge from their sentence. We want to hear from you before we get into the conversation. Give us a call, 1-866-9100. We want to hear from ex-convicts who have been through or are going through the process, or the general listener audience. What do you think about the process of restoring citizenship rights as a felon should be like? Tweet us at IPR Talk or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Back for the second half of the show, Democratic Senator Steve Sodders of State Center. Thanks for being back for the second half, Senator.
Thank you.
As well as Republican Senator Charles Schneider of West Des Moines. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So I'll start with you, Senator Sodders. What convicts are we talking about and what rights would be restored?
Essentially, this would go back to the executive order that Governor Vilsack did, 42, saying that if a felon has executed everything that we've asked them to do, they've done their time, they've paid their restitution, they're off all papers, that they get the ability to come back in and be a part of society by being able to vote.
And this was easier before 2011 when Governor Branstad changed things a little bit. Why was there a need for change under the governor's thoughts there?
Well, that would be that'd be a good question for the governor. But I think what we are trying to do is so that we don't have dueling executive orders. You have one governor that comes in at one point and says, I believe it's okay for these ex-felons as long as they meet all our requirements to be able to vote. New governor comes in and changes it. Next governor comes in and changes it back. I think it's up to the legislature to fix this problem and have it one way, have it in legislation, and I think that'll take care of dueling executive orders.
Isn't that just the way things work in a purple state like Iowa?
Well, that's how it's working now, but again, it's the legislature, it's our job to take this task on. It is an issue, and we need to legislate it. We should say it should be one way or the other, and I believe that if we've asked them to do everything and we're trying to get them back in society, back involved, that this is a fundamental basic right that they should have is to vote.
Senator Schneider, how do you come at the issue?
Well, we do want people who've completely served their sentences to eventually be able to have their citizenship rights restored. The means by which that process happens, though, is something that we disagree with in part. It's my understanding that Vilsack's executive order actually does not require that restitution be paid. And we think that it is important that restitution be repaid to compensate society for court costs and those types of things, and also to compensate the victims for any damage that was done to them or any pain or suffering that they incurred. So in your opening statements, you made reference to the fact that this blanket restoration of rights had been in place for several years. It had, but prior to that, there was a process specified for reapplying for citizenship rights in the Iowa Code, and that actually has been in place longer than Governor Vilsack's initial executive order. So what we're trying to do is just make sure that victims and society have been fully restituted for damages they've incurred before felons can actually have their citizenship rights restored, including voting.
So you don't see this as a dueling executives. It's something that was in place for many years and changed under Vilsack's leadership.
Right.
Senator Sodders, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think if you go to what we're trying to do in this bill, we do talk about making sure that all obligations of the conviction, all restitution fines, everything is paid, and they're off parole papers. So it does get to a little bit of what Senator Schneider said was, that's what we're trying to get to. You've done everything we've asked you to do. You've paid all your fines. You've paid back your victims. You're now a taxpaying citizen. You've got a job. Should you have the right to do that basic fundamental thing is vote? And we believe that that's what we should be doing.
And so this would make it easier for them once they're released, then, is what how it would work.
Correct. And we also leave in there that they can still make an application to the governor if they want to do that. But this gives them the ability that if they do everything we've asked them to do, pay the fines, they've done their time, that they're able to vote.
What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 1-866-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or give us an email at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to go to the phones to David in Des Moines. David, you're on River to River.
Hi. In this conversation, I think that there's one thing that's never mentioned, and that is that some offenders have such high restitutions, such as for unlawful death, they may have served their sentence, and they will get out and finish a work release program and get a job, but they will never in their lifetime be able to pay off a restitution. And with the current law, that means that they will never be able to vote.
Senator Schneider, how do you respond to that?
Well, I guess from a broader standpoint, the severity or the amount of the restitution is court imposed, and the higher the restitution, the more reflective that is of the severity of the crime. With murder, for example, the person whose life was taken will never have their life back. The loved ones who the loved ones of the victim will never see that victim again the rest of their days here. And with certain penalties, or with certain crimes come certain penalties, and the court in certain situations does impose tough restitution standards, but it's reflective of the crime committed.
Senator Sauters?
Yeah, and I would add that we sort of touch on that within this bill, because you could still apply to the governor. So in that situation where you don't feel like you'll be able to pay it all off, maybe you've paid on it for years, you still have the ability, or that person would still have the ability, to make an application to the governor, and the governor could then restore those rights. So there's kind of a twofold way to be able to do this. And I think those folks would be covered within being able to apply to the governor still.
Which is fine, but a blanket restoration of someone's right to vote just seems like it. I think that would make a victim feel as though the pain and the suffering that they felt at the hands of the felon just is not important to the state.
I'd like to bring in another perspective and voice to the conversation. Jamie Ross is also with us here in the law library. She's a rehabilitated felon who was convicted of second-degree murder and served 8.5 years for a 50-year sentence, now lives in Norwalk. Welcome to River to River.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your story, Jamie.
Well, 16 years old, hanging out with a group of kids that I just met, and the gentlemen that were in the group decided that they were going to rob somebody, and that night they ended up beating our victim to death. I have never laid a hand on our victim. Myself and the other female that was included never did anything like that. But we were charged with first-degree murder and first-degree robbery, and under the state of Iowa laws, we were guilty of both, as if they were both premeditated, so we could have been juvenile lifers right now. The prosecuting attorney saw that I had remorse and saw that the facts of the crime, and he gave me the opportunity to plead guilty. While I was away, I changed my life. There is no doubt about that. Unfortunately, it did take somebody else's life to give me back my life. But everything that I have done since then has been to ensure that other people don't have to learn the hard way as I did. Now, you know, what these guys are saying, you know, before Vilsack made it a blanket to where we could get our rights back, we did have hoops to jump through, but as was brought up, a lot of people have restitution that they will never have paid off. We have people who are on parole still, who are basically wasting space and funds on parole because they can't pay off the restitution. Now, in order for somebody to get their rights back under Vilsack's law, it was basically saying, once you were off paper, well, or discharged your sentence, well, you can't get off paper unless all your fines are paid off, period. So I understand that people who discharge their sentence, which this is the way it is now anyway, once you discharge your sentence, whether you still have fines pending or not, you've discharged your sentence. People can still come after you for that money, but you're done. A lot of us, though, that are out here and have done our time, we have paid our, what everybody calls, debt to society. We are wanting to contribute. We want to give back. I can't vote for who's running my children's schools. I, as an ex-felon right now, I can't volunteer more than 10 hours at my child's school a month without passing a background check. I can't go on a lot of different things. And I understand. I absolutely get. I'm not pro-inmate at all. I am pro-responsibility. If we are taking responsibility for our life, our crimes, our time, and we have changed our lives, why are you still holding us down? Let us contribute.
Tell me a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you have changed your life. What are you doing now?
I am an office manager at an acupuncture office now. Before that, I was working with a retinal surgeon, and I'm an ophthalmic technician. There's a lot of things in my life that I would love to do that I can't do because I am a felon. I've always wanted to be a nurse. However, I cannot. So I do things to fill my heart in other ways by still continuing patient care and helping. But again, it's hard for ex-felons to get jobs. We have to explain to, I could be 87 years old going for a job, and I have to explain to you what I did when I was 16 years old. And we already have enough things that are holding us down and holding us back. So I appreciate the open-mindedness that some do have and our ability to change. Because a lot of us are out here. You may not know it. We're sitting next to you in restaurants. We're living next to you. Until recently, when I was on the news helping my friend get out of prison, my neighbors didn't know because I'm normal. I don't have a felon tattoo on my forehead. You can't pick us out that way. We are out here. We're contributing already. Let us vote for our next governor.
Senator Schneider, you've heard Jamie's story. How do you respond to it?
Well, first of all, I want to commend Jamie on her rehabilitation and on the contributions that she does make to her community right now and the contribution she wants to make. This, for us, just gets back to the issue of a blanket restoration before restitution is made to the victims of the crime. That's an area that we just don't feel is just to society or just to the victims.
Senator Sodders?
Well, again, we're a state of laws, and you know, sending someone to prison is a punishment that's done through the courts. But at what point do we quit punishing people after they've went through all the things that we've asked them to go through? And again, like in Jamie's case, she is a taxpayer. She's kids are going to our schools. She's involved, and so why shouldn't she be involved in the electoral process of voting? It's a basic fundamental right, and getting to that. Now, if money's the only thing that makes people feel better, I guess that's one issue, but I don't think that's it. And I think there are a lot of victims or families of victims who at some point do forgive what happens to them, and they would like to see these people become better people. And one of the ways we can make ex-felons better people is to get them more involved in society, get them more involved into our politics, more involved into their communities, clear down, as Jamie said, to the school board level, and being able to vote who's on their school board and who's their city council person and who's spending their taxpayers' money that way. You're always going to have some people that will never be off paper. There are a lot of folks that are felons that reoffend and reoffend, and those folks will never fall underneath this bill. So I think there are some differences, and it all depends on that individual person.
We're going to go to the phone line here. We have Mary from Keokuk County. Mary, you're on River to River.
Thank you. I find it a strange dichotomy that our current governor is so tough on juveniles who offend and who has rescinded the voting rights of those who incarcerated who have served their time and made restitution and have to go before him personally, when the elephant in the room is his own son during his first three terms his own troubled son at the time, was involved in accidents that took several lives, and was found to be in possession of drugs and other alcohol, and he never served any time. So the fact that the man has no heart for people who have served their time, I find just incomprehensible and unconscionable. Thank you.
So, Mary is, I guess, looking at the law as the way that it was signed under Vilsack, that was the way to go. I guess when you hear what Mary has to say, Jamie, I'm curious to have your insight, maybe not as much about the governor and his son, but just from that train of thought that she's coming from.
You know, I absolutely get everybody's frustration in with bringing up the past. Although it is frustrating, I choose to not continue to hold, you know, Governor Branstad accountable for his son's actions. Unfortunately, I mean, that'd be like holding my parents accountable for mine. And in reality, it had nothing to do with them. So, you know, thankfully, Eric is grown and he's doing great and he is giving back to his community now. But moving on to the circumstances that face us now, you know, we can't change the future if we're going to keep looking to the past like that. We have to understand that he does have a heart. He has a heart for a lot of different things. Right now, he is just looking at it from a victim's point of view, and I understand that. The only thing that I think that he's forgetting is that we change. People change, just as his own family has changed, just as he has changed. How many of you would want to be held accountable for something that you did when you were a teenager for the rest of your life? I don't even want to go with what's fair and what's not, because I absolutely do sympathize with the victims. I speak on victim impact panels. I volunteer at the prison, and that is what I talk about, is let's respect the victims. Let's look at it from that point of view. But there's a lot of people out there like me. There's a ton of people out there like me. If you leave the state house today and you go out there and seek them out, you're going to find a ton of people. And look at any of the clinics that people are volunteering in. I bet you there's felons in each one of those. You don't know it. You don't know it.
We're going to go to the phone again. Bill called 1-866-780-9100. He's calling from Sac City. Bill, you're on River to River.
Well, thank you for taking my call. And my comment is when dealing with felons who have served their time and cannot vote, one has to ask what is the goal of having a felon not vote? If your goal is to have them become a contributing member or contributing members to society, then let them vote. If your goal, on the other hand, is to be vindictive and punish them, do not let them vote. Once you answer those questions, the solution is easy. And the legislators just have to quit wringing their hands and quit wasting time and just answer those two simple questions and get on with it. Thank you.
Okay, that Senator Schneider, how would you respond to Bill's comments?
Well, I would say that it's really the court that determines what not only the sentence is, but what the level of restitution ought to be. And the court, whether it's the jury or the judge, when making the determination of punishment, decides at that time, based on the severity of the crime and the circumstances presented, what sentence the felon should serve, and how much that person should have to pay in restitution. So the whole issue about how much restitution to pay really is done by the judge. And what the point we're trying to make with restitution is that that's a part of the sentence, and that's a part of what the judge has determined the person should satisfy before they have their citizenship rights restored. Now, one of the things that someone can do if they have completed their sentence but before they've paid all their restitution is still make an application to the governor to have their voting rights restored. And I think that actually is a better way of determining whether or not a felon really has been rehabilitated and wants to contribute to society, because it's an affirmative action that they're making to get their voting rights.
All right, we want to go to one last call. Jim from Spencer, really quick, you're on River to River.
Yeah, the whole problem with removing one's voting rights is it really has absolutely nothing to do with the kind of punishment that they should serve to society for having committed a crime. Once they're out of prison, their time is served, and it does no one any good to remove them from the political process. It helps no one whatsoever, other than possibly a few people that want to sit back and relax and think, there's one person I don't have to think about voting for somebody I don't like. So it's really a pointless punishment that occurs after punishment is over.
Okay, Bill, thanks. Just quickly, Senator Sodders, I'm curious to know, there is some opposition. There's concerns about the victims. What's the likelihood that you could move forward with this out of the Senate and in the House, and it could be passed in as a bill and made into a law?
Well, I can speak for the Senate, and I believe we can pass this in the Senate. It's likely to – it's out of subcommittee. It'll get out of committee and to the floor. And we believe this is the right thing to do for ex-felons. Again, if they've done everything we've asked them to do, if that's the but for, then I think we have to give them the ability to do the fundamental right of voting. And keep in mind, I think Jamie said this, it's not easy to get a job when you have a felon tag. It's not like you get the best paying jobs ever. So it does take a while to pay these fines off. And as long as they're still paying them off while they're being able to vote, I think they ought to be able to do that.
Okay, that's where we'll have to end it. Thanks so much to my guests, Senator Schneider and Senator Sodders, as well as thanks so much to you, Jamie Ross, for being on River to River today.
Thank you.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News, produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Contact us at any time at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org.